Economic Development Committee meeting, Tuesday, September 3rd, 2019. Of Alderman Frieders. Alderman Peterson, I'm missing somebody. Myself.
Mr. Koch.
Oh, thank you. You told me. I was like, we have Alderman Funkhauser and lots of guests and staff. There's a sign-in sheet going around, so if you could sign in for Marlis, that would be great. So do we have any citizens' comments with all our... Nope? Okay. Minutes for correction and approval from August 6, 2019. Comments, questions on our minutes? Are we good to accept them as presented?
Yes.
Okay, well, let's go to new business, EDC 2019-70, the building permit report for July 2019.
All right, in July we did 380 permits, 18 of them were single family homes. Lots of roofing permits from storm damage still. So we're up significantly from last year in our total permit volume. We're at the end of this month, we're at 1,030, whereas opposed to last year, we're at 749. A lot of that is just storm damage and other things like that. It's caused a huge influx of permitting.
Comments or questions on this? Okay, we are good. Can we send that on, or is it just FYI?
That's an informational item.
Two, EDC 2019-71 Building Inspection Report for July 2019.
All right, in July we did 587 inspections. 162 of those were roofing inspections. So most communities don't do roofing inspections, but we've decided in our community we're going to do every single one, no matter what. If we sell a permit for it, we inspect it. So we get a lot of complaints from roofing companies about that, but we're not willing to just let them do what they want to do.
Well, I think under the circumstances and how many people are getting new roofs, that's a good thing.
Yeah, and especially,
with stormers coming in that may not be from this region and know what they need to put on for a roof.
Yes, and with the some people who test when the roofs have come off, they see what job was done the first time when no one inspected them. We don't want that to happen again. So, yeah. So if you have any resident complaints or anything like that, just direct them right to us and we'll handle it.
Okay. Any comments or questions on that report? All right, let's go on to three, EDC 2019-72, Property Maintenance Report for July 2019.
All right, we were 23 cases in July, just pretty much a lot of the standard things, weeds, motor vehicles, commercial vehicles, and one trash. So,
I just have a question. So there's a house down Houston Stewart Circle Center that's vacant that we keep mowing. So that's just an ongoing thing because we know it's vacant. I mean, it's not a complaint. It doesn't go on the complaint list.
No, we keep it on our list as far as if it's a property that has been a consistent issue, a consistent violator. We follow our process every time. We send a notice violation. We wait the time period. We issue a citation, go to hearing, and then after the hearing's done, we have to go out and mow it. That way we can establish our proper change when we handle it so we can lien the property.
Yeah, because I didn't notice that on here, so I didn't know if that's because it's not a complaint. It's just this ongoing thing.
We're having with all the influx of permitting we've had to keep our property maintenance person in the office to assist the administrative staff. I think we've just been pretty much doing all complaint-based anything, mm-hmm. and then just some of the big standout ones that we've had. We've been, in general, keeping Gina in the office almost 6 hours out of the 8-hour workday. And on top of it, we have some staff.
I was just curious how those properties like that were being handled.
Yeah, in the normal case, that would be it's on our list, and we would continuously go out every single week. It'd go to adjudication, we'd mark it on our list, and then the very next week we'd back up looking at it again. If it was still in violation, we'd follow our process again. But
I had noticed that one on the adjudication, so that's why I was just kind of curious, too.
Yeah.
I don't know what the address that is, but that's a...
Yeah,
I didn't know how, like, properties like that. I'm sure, you know, there's...
A lot of times we just keep those on our list and we go forward with our duty handling it. But,
okay, I was just curious.
Well, I'll ask Gina when you know.
Okay, thank you. Any other comments or questions on that? All right, let's go to EDC 2019-73, our Economic Development Report for August. Lynn.
So you have the report in your packet, and I have two additions. We've had a couple of things that were moving around, and so we were able to get them completed. So I wanted to report two additional new businesses that are coming to Yorkville. One is called Breathe Salt Cave. They're going in a 1,400 square foot space at Fountain Village. Pete met this lady, and she was at one time looking at the old jail. But, you know, her timeline was to really get started in. She likes Peter a lot. She said she may actually revisit working with him on something else, but she wanted to get started on this. So she's going into a space in Fountain Village, which is 47 and 71, that has never been leased. So it's a virgin space that's going to be built out for her. A salt cave is a place that you go. You spend about 45 minutes with 10 to 12 other people. And you are unplugged during that time, and you are breathing in Himalayan salt. It's good for asthma, COPD, colds, bronchitis, pneumonia, cystic fibrosis, allergies, even arthritis. There is one in Naperville, so it's something that a lot of people are looking for, and so it's a nice addition, and maybe we will draw some people outside of Yorkville to come to our salt cave. So that is one new business that's going to be opening sometime by the end of fall. And the other is Yorkville Salon Suites. That's going in also in Fountain Village in the former Whole Child Pediatric Space. That space has built out with 8 little rooms. They were examining rooms, and so they're going to take those 8 rooms and make them little suites for salon stylists. They'll be able to do hair but not nails because there is a nail salon in that center. And they already have 2 commitments for 2 stylists. So they should both be ready later in the fall. And if anybody has any other questions.
Any questions on Lynn's report? Comments?
Okay,
we're good. 5 EDC 2019-74 Menards, plat of re-subdivision.
Okay, Menards had submitted some plans to us probably earlier this year, looking to add what they call their area where you do online purchasing. You can pick up the building materials on the side. And what we noticed is that the building did not meet the setback requirements because of their existing property line. The International Building Code requires them when they have that kind of situation where you have a building and you have access to the rear, you have to have a continuous 60-foot access around the building. So in order to meet the setback for that district where they're located in the B3 of 20 feet, they had to adjust their property line. So they have two existing lots. They have lot 1, which is where the improved Menards big box building is, and then lot 2, which is vacant and it's being used for agricultural purposes. So all they're asking is to adjust the lot line between lots 1 and 2 about 20 feet so that they can meet all the setback requirements in the International Building Code. So it's a final plat amendment, and they are actually proposed to go before the PZC. It's not a public hearing, but a public meeting next month. So actually September 11th, and then come back to City Council in October. They do not have a petitioner here tonight because of some scheduling issues, but if you have any comments or questions, I can relay those to the petitioner as well. Engineering has reviewed the plans. They have minor comments, which they'll have addressed before we come back for our final plat approval.
Any comments or questions on this?
I don't think so. Pretty straightforward.
Okay. Sounds good. Let's go on to 6, EDC 2019-75, the Grand Reserve Units 26 and 27, final plat.
So we have another final plat request. This is Dean Edmeyer's here from representing Avante, who's a developer. So if you remember, the final plat for this particular subdivision was not completed. They had a preliminary plat for Units 26 and 27 that the City Council approved back in 2006. Preliminary plats expired within a year. The downturn happened, and they hadn't looked at this particular section until they started building out in the other sections. So this particular area is part of the Colonies, zoned R2, and it's more for a villa-style type housing. It's age-targeted, not age-restricted. The housing product is what they offer. And just last year, the city approved an amendment to the annexation agreement for the Colonies so that they can have unlimited number of 3-bedroom units, if you remember. So they're building out in this section. The area is about 52 acres. They're building about 171 units in this particular two units of the development. So it'll be 171 lots. We compared with the originally approved preliminary plans. They're generally consistent. There are cul-de-sacs located in this location so that there's guest parking because there's limited on-street parking, if any. And those cul-de-sacs will be owned by the Homeowners Association, so they are not maintained by the city. All of the bulk regulations have been met, rear yards, side yards, they're all consistent with what was approved as part of the annexation agreement. The developer is requesting that they build out this in a couple of phases, four phases to be exact. We have reviewed it to make sure that we have a continuing loop for water as each phase goes along. The developer did request that they bond on a phase-by-phase basis. The staff actually is opposed to that. We are seeking bonding on a unit-by-unit basis. It's easier for tracking purposes and is consistent with our subdivision control ordinance. This particular final plat is going to move forward to planning and zoning in October, October 9th meeting to be exact, and possibly hit the city council on October 22nd. So Dean is here. If you have any questions about
any comments or questions on this?
Will the difference in opinion about how you bond it hold anything up?
It's not a difference in opinion. We're fine with it.
Okay.
Yeah, we what we did was draw the phasing lines to match the units. So my phase 1 and 2 is unit 26. So I'll bond both of those at the same time.
Okay.
And then unit 27 is phase 3 and 4. Beautiful.
Okay. So we're all good? Mm-hmm. All right. Keep that one moving.
Do you mind if I step out? I've got one more stop.
So let's go on to 7, EDC 2019-76, School of Expressive Arts and Learning, otherwise known as SEAL, Special Use.
All right. Karen Larson is here on behalf of SEAL. They are requesting a special use authorization for the property at 109 Beaver Street to conduct a school within the M1 district. Looking at properties around the area, it's within Fox Industrial Park. Directly to the west is Bristol Kendall Fire District, and to the north are some townhomes. So project description, they're planning on having a school, a for-profit school to function at the site where they take students from other public schools in the area in a much smaller classroom setting for specialized curriculum. To start, they're going to have a total of 3 classrooms. They're going to retrofit the just front part of the building. And then overall, there's a long-term plan to have up to 9 classrooms. And they will be capped at 10 students per classroom. In terms of parking, and in general, they're not doing anything to the exterior. They're not adding square footage. They're not changing the layout of any structures or driveways or anything like that. They're just using the initial. So this is just a special use for land use. So in terms of parking, currently there's 18 striped parking spaces in the front with 2 handicapped spots. And there's also 2 striped spaces on the west side of the building. We're treating this as a, there's 2 different regulations in our zoning code about some for elementary and junior high versus high school. We're calculating this as a elementary or junior high school as all the kids will be bused once in the morning, once in the afternoon, and therefore no one's driving and parking. There are no high school students. So they need one per classroom. So they are well over par because they need a total of 9 spaces. So they're more than regularly parked. In terms of traffic circulation for the buses, they're going to use the existing driveways. It's going to make one circular pattern going all the way around the property. We've suggested that the petitioner might add a sign or two stating where to go, just in case you are coming and you're, not sure, and you don't want to turn around and cause any backups.
Where can they turn around at? Because that was my question, is how do buses get in and then get out?
So they come all the way up north around the property, and they actually come out, go over east, then come out south on the other person's property, outside the yellow box. Yeah. So they have an easement agreement to use that driveway. Which is attached in the packet as well.
Good, I was going to say, I could get a little hairy.
Yeah. So... And then finally, the comprehensive plan calls for this area to be generally industrial, as it is part of the Fox Industrial area. In 2016, there was actually a text amendment to allow these types of schools in the M1 and M2, special uses. There's actually a very similar school nearby that functions in a very similar way. So in terms of future land use, it is, since we permit these in the manufacturing districts, this would be considered in line with that comprehensive plan, future land use. This will be going to October 9th PZC public hearing and hopefully the October 22nd City Council meeting. If you have any questions, Karen is here for that. Or
no comments or questions?
I only received a couple comments on this because they said that basically, not sniping, but basically that's what Grace is there for. But Grace doesn't have the relationship with the school districts that this particular school does. So on that same topic, number one, we set precedents by allowing schools in this area. You can't say yes to one and no to another. Two, the city is not the bastion of business. We don't say no, you can't build a burger joint next to a burger joint. We all love burgers. But then three, and most importantly, you have freedom to build wherever it is permitted. So I don't see anything wrong with it. I do think that's a strange use of that building. Having spent a number of hours on the back of that dairy on various points of my life, I would say that you've got a lot of empty room, but you won't need a gym because there's plenty of room in there. Beyond that, I mean, I'm glad to see vacant properties filled up, so I don't see anything wrong with it.
I had an opportunity many years ago to tour your one in Bolingbrook.
Oh, you did?
Yes.
Oh.
And it's a very neat school.
Yeah.
So
that gives
excited.
You the vision of
yes.
what that ends up becoming inside. Yes.
And that's in a industrial
that's
area.
Exactly.
So, I think it's cool. It's a cool school. And there's a need, and I'm sure the district is really happy.
Oh, they are, yes, they're thrilled.
For the kids that go there, it's a lot less busing.
Oh, my gosh, a couple hours, I bet.
Yes,
yeah.
Yes.
There's nothing like that around.
We have a long-standing relationship with the district, 156. So.
Glad to hear you coming.
Yeah, so. We're excited.
Well, I think we're going to just continue on with that one, too. We're okay. Welcome. Eight EDC 2019-77 B1 zoning district text amendment for special use.
Okay, when the city was engaging the proposals for the old jail, we had two proposals at that time, and I was asked to look at both proposals and kind of review them for zoning compliance if they were to come through. So the approved developer CJ Restoration had a plan, and they had apartments in one section of the building on both levels of the floor, and then commercial on the other. Because this location is zoned B1, the intended use is mostly for commercial, and then you can have ancillary apartments above on the first floor and a maximum of two. So because we hadn't moved forward with our downtown overlay district, which would outright permit this type of use, we felt that we should move forward with amending the text to allow this developer to move forward. So the intent of the text amendment is to keep the original thought of the B1 district being commercial, but kind of using a hybrid of what we're doing with the downtown overlay district and our current zoning, and allow apartments on both levels, but the total square footage of the building, at least 25% has to be dedicated to commercial land use. It doesn't have to be necessarily on the first floor, but just overall 25%. And we kind of narrowed the scope so that you wouldn't see a lot of peripheration of the B1 land uses within the city being used for residential purposes. So we narrowed it to B1 in an existing building and in the downtown historic core, so we keep narrowing it down, and then in that historic core is defined by our comprehensive plan. It's a special use, and like I said, at least 25% of the overall gross square footage is utilized for commercial. With those parameters in place, you've got about three properties that will fall into this: the old jail, the county-owned former Olson property, and then there's a single-family residence next to our parking structure. So that's the only location that generally this would fall into. If you have any questions, we're going for a public hearing on this at the October 9th PZC. And I think we try to stay within, again, keeping with what the original code has, what the intent of the B1, and what we're trying to move forward with the form-based code.
Comments, questions?
When you read the synopsis, you're like, oh, think of all the strip malls that are turning into apartments, but I'm glad that you narrowed it down. Get creative, make it work.
And we would drop this proposal if the form-based code gets approved and would permit the jail to do what they had planned to do. So, depending on the next item.
Okay. So, we're kind of tentative if that needs to move forward or not, then.
Well, we're going to publish. We're going to move forward with it so that it can be done as quickly as possible on the off chance that the form-based code lags. If it does lag, then we'll have them come in with a special use application. Mm-hmm. And go through that process. So.
Okay. Sounds good. All right, let's go on to old business. EDC 2019-23 Downtown Form-Based Code and Streetscape Master Plan.
Okay. I have a PowerPoint. I'm just going to pass around slides if you want, because I'm not going to directly off there. I'm going to try to keep this as quickly and as conversational as possible.
Jason. Yes.
Stated, we felt that there was some hesitancy in the adoption of the form-based code. Last couple of months, maybe 4 months, we went through it, and I think the presentation was so up here, such an aerial view of it, the understanding of how it was really going to affect on the ground level wasn't on the back end. We did the analysis, but we didn't present that to you in a way that could be digestible. So this is a review of kind of how we did our technical review to come up with why we're choosing these land uses, why we're choosing this process. So that's a bad looking slide. But in your memo, this actual table is in there. So what we're trying to do is just show you why the form-based code is the new thing in zoning as opposed to traditional Euclidean, this is a zone, this is residential, this is commercial. And the whole point is, the biggest takeaway is that traditional zoning is all about land, it's about use zones, uses, can sometimes be unpredictable, they're focusing on one single land use per district, where as form-based code, as it states, is more looking at the building. How does the building interact with the surrounding land use, with the programming? What's the district it's going to be located? So what are the characteristics? Some uses may not be appropriate along Bridge Street, even though they're commercial land uses. More emphasis on the building, gives more predictability on the public realm, and it offers that kind of mix, that diversity that thriving cities usually have in their downtown. So what does this mean? Okay, so we looked at the zoning overall in the downtown. And as you can see, it shows you a lot of the commercial land uses are falling along Bridge Street. They do kind of straddle along hydraulic, but as you get further out on hydraulic, even east and west, it goes more to open land use. This area compromises about 28 acres. And then when you get down on West Van Emmon, we have the commercial core along 47, and then it goes outward west for more residential, and east it's commercial, and then you get a little funky in one land use there, which really has no place in a downtown. Ironically, 56% of the downtown is zoned commercial, which makes sense, but is it being used for commercial? And it's really not. So we looked at that. Only 27% is being used for commercial. Almost equally is residential in a downtown. So that's telling us that these land uses can coexist in a downtown, but they don't necessarily have to exist on different parcels. we can build upon that synergy that's already there with residential and commercial, like traditional downtowns have. But we can look at it in a different way than just zoning districts. Maybe we can look at how these uses interact with the transportation land use. So this is telling us that we have a problem, And the problem is that even though a predominant zoning in the downtown is commercial, only 27% is really used. So it's underutilization. And you couple that with the land uses that I mentioned actually coexisting well in the downtown, you're primed for redevelopment. And it's already telling you that the appropriate location for mix of uses in buildings is actually not a bad idea. And that's what the form-based code is telling us, what it's planning to do. So when you go to, as we were talking in the previous slide about highest and best use not being met because it's underutilized, so we need to know what's actually out there. And to better understand the relationship of our current zoning, the current land uses, and the form-based code, we have this chart. And this chart is just showing you that the form-based code has classified these five major streets or thoroughfares based off characteristics that they have. You know, what volume of traffic goes by them, how are they fronted, what types of access do these streets have. And so we've classified them by Bridge Street being the most heavily used, so you'll have the most highest use of commercial. Then you have Hydraulic and Van Emmon, which are similar in structure, but as I mentioned, as you go west on Van Emmon, you get more residential, so you'll go into the B Street residential land uses. And then you'll have a B Street. B Street is actually a commercial land use, but kind of a lower intense commercial land use. And so this is just showing you all the current zoning and how that lines up with the form-based code classification. So you may have on a site like this one, where depending on how the building is fronted, how it's designed, you'll have three different options of construction. So Van Emmon has its own standards, B Street has its own, and Hydraulic has its own. Bart had mentioned it would probably be easier if we colored in the blocks to show what form-based code district standard it will fall under. But as we mentioned, you can have a couple of choices, or you can have multiple buildings. That's another thing that form-based code allows, multiple buildings on a particular site, and it'll have different standards. And because it's now this particular lot, if you face here, it's now fronting commercial, I mean residential. Whereas if it faces here, it's more commercial. And that's what our current zoning ordinance doesn't do. It plops down a zoning district, and it doesn't tell you how to address existing land uses around you. So then you can get a very tall building next to a residential because it hasn't taken into consideration that existing programming of the building. So what's there? And the reason why I'm showing this is because we had a lot of conversation about, oh, this could be a very tall building next to residential, single-family residential. Well, we kind of already have that going on right now. These are locations where single-family, and single-family is identified in these shaded areas, R2 zoning, where the land uses, maybe R3 too, are currently adjacent to multifamily office and commercial. So right here you got townhomes facing single-family residential. You've got apartments here facing single-family residential. You've got office here facing single-family residential, even though that's the land use, but the zoning on that particular parcel is B3. This area here, you have a mix of office and apartments. So it's office on the first floor, and you've got apartments on the second floor. And then this location here, you've got apartments, and this is residential. So we already have, as I said, that coexistence of some very intense residential next to commercial. So what can we do there now? And this is important because even though you have that coexistence, you also have the ability to do more. And this is what you can do with a building permit and without city council approval today. So right here, you can finish out those townhomes with a maximum height of 80 feet, six stories. Right here, you got single family, but you can also do a public or a private school there. B2, as we mentioned, that particular has a residential land use, but a B2 zoning. You can put a hospital, auto parts store, car rental. I don't even know if these exist anymore. People have dance halls and disco, but a zoning ordinance would allow it.
It's going to come back.
There you go. The B1, which would be the traditional zoning district that would allow mixed abuse. You could just tear all that down and build one big funeral home, 80 feet, six stories, commercial laboratory, pawn shop, trailer park, camp. And it does not address these residential land uses. That would not be compatible, not even with commercial, but especially not with residential. And again, you can do more townhomes here. The M1 is interesting because not only could you do a bus, semi-truck repair, if it met that buffer that we established for that, you can do an adult business in the M1 district.
See, so, I've been saying all along.
You've got some very intense uses that could happen right now by pulling a building permit and not having city council approval. So the intent of the form-based code was to kind of weed out those uses just in the downtown that are not appropriate for what the long-term plan of the downtown is, which is walkability, more commerce, more mix of uses. So it's not going to permit any of these uses that would not fit within the downtown, but it's going to encourage these uses. And there's a chart in there, and that's in the form-based code. Kind of give you an example. I won't go through each of those. So how does it compare? So I told you what we have, what we could have, and what we're proposing. So how does it compare? Well, the form-based code is broken down, as I told you, not only into districts, but it's further broken down by building types. So just because a property has a district of a high use intensity along Bridge Street, depending on what type of building they're putting there, it's further refined by other standards that you would consider traditional bulk standards. So a downtown commercial is more or less just all commercial. You can have some residential in it, but residential can't be on the main floor. And if it is, it has to be set back behind commercial storefrontage. So you can go six stories on Bridge Street, but at that third story, you have to step the building back about 3 feet. We have none of that in our current zoning. You can go straight six stories in a B4, B3, B2. And when you go into other street frontages that are adjacent to residential or other less intense land uses, now you're down to four stories, which is less in overall height for the form-based code than what we have now. Downtown living, that would be a combo of kind of similar to the B1 district where you have a combo of commercial on the first floor, residential above. That's maxed out at four stories. Right now you can go six stories. Cottage commercial, that is a commercial building that kind of looks like a residential building. You see a lot of those in Plainfield, but those were existing residentials that were converted into residential. This is actually trying to mimic that look through new construction. And again, it's 3.5 stories, and you can go four stories on Bridge Street. That would be kind of consistent with the B1, which again is six stories. Attached buildings, which are your townhomes, those four stories on Bridge Street, 3.5, all other streets, that's consistent with the R3, R4, six stories. The yard building, that name may sound kind of weird, but it's residential single family detached. And that's 3.5 stories. That you can go a story higher than what's permitted actually here. So that's the only district where you're getting a little bit more than what we currently have. And then civic is allowed in all these districts. And M1, which has no maximum height, is not permitted at all in the form. So how does the review and approval process work? It's similar, almost identical. The only thing is if it's permitted, you proceed to the building permit process in the traditional review. You have limited discretion from city staff to deviate, so you have to get it approved by PCC. The form-based code, we lay out the standards and the opportunities that we have, minor deviations that are allowed by staff, but you're approving those up front. So basically, you approve land uses here up front, bulk regulations, and then you give us our blessing and send us off and allow buildings to be built accordingly. This one, you've kind of established even more than what you've given us to review here. And then any major deviations, I'm not allowed to do PCC approval. And this deviation is not unheard of. It's already in our zoning code under the PUD. So if we have already done a PUD, and there's deviations of about 5% for lot coverage, or I can do that already with administrative approval.
Do you have a list of those major and minor deviations in the code or in the proposal?
They're in the packet, but I can go through them right quick. I'll pull them up. They are similar, like I said, to what we do in the PUD. So,
just a couple examples of which I think would be good.
Sure. I'm just going to find it in here.
Of the building within up to 1 foot from any minimum yard, up to 5% total impervious coverage, not to exceed the total amount of impervious surface. So 5% decrease in front property line coverage, additional height of any story up to 2 feet. So
yeah, and then the location of the building up to 1 foot within the minimum yard. So if there's a issue of 1 foot, it has to be 20 feet there, 19. Then I can have that ability to do deviations. So they're not major deviations, again, that has to go back to PZC.
Facade types. Looks like that's in there.
But you're approving all of the facades already, so I just have the discretion to kind of go in between what's been approved and give them a variation. If the frontage is a different frontage than another approved frontage. But again, there are special uses that are listed in the form-based code, and those have to go through the same process as the regular, traditional zoning. The only difference is you either have a permitted use or you have a special use, and that's it. There's no rezoning in the downtown Overland District. So if someone came in now and wanted to build something that wasn't permitted in the B2 district, and it's in a B3, they can come and ask the city council to rezone the property and go through a whole public hearing process. But because we have packaged all the land uses by building type and form, there's no need to rezone. If you can't do it in that particular lot, then you pick a different building type and you can do it, or you front the building in a different location and then you can get those uses afforded to you. So that cuts down either special use or nothing. And so Jason's going to talk about what this all can look like. So he's got about 3 examples from a couple of the major frontages along 47, Van Emmon, and Hydraulic.
So for the most part, I'll go over these quickly. These are very broad, kind of, we just kind of looked at the form-based code and the standards and tried to create just a very quick outline, and we did our best to make, I did my best to make an attempted, you know, massing model to kind of give you a look at how it would look. So the first one is the Bridge Street Development Exhibit, which we show is the Van Emmon Activity Center, which, yes, we own, but it's still a good spot. It's probably going to get redeveloped. It's a great location. So this shows the existing layout, and this shows what a future potential layout would look like. It's very similar, but this kind of has that built-in line and everything like that. Here's the massing. Here's what really matters is, so this is the maximum 4-story. I actually changed on the model, and I'll switch back. These two should actually be stepped back according to our code. Yeah, so But I was trying to get an angle here to show kind of the difference in heights here. It's not super true to scale, as there's no terrain. And see, down here over by the bridge, it goes down, but the bridge goes up. So the whole time you're downhill, there's very different, elevations.
So in this example, okay, you got four stories, 45 feet-ish.
Right.
Okay, so developer would be able to buy the property, come in, pull a building permit for this project, assuming it met all the setbacks, lot coverage, parking requirements for what they were doing, and they'd be able to pull a building permit and go under the existing zoning code because it's B2. They could do the same thing, come in and pull a building permit for up to 80 feet tall and six stories without further city council authorization. So here you're actually reining in a little bit of the design potentials and development potentials on the property. So it's still, you might look at it and still go, how can we authorize this at a staff level? But the existing code is actually worse in that regard. And then additionally, it's in a TIF district. So, a developer that is going to do something like this is going to be asking for TIF assistance. And so it's more likely that they're going to come to you and say, hey, I want you to review this ahead of time. I want to know exactly what you want because I need TIF to do X, Y, and Z. And then there's that approval process baked into, development.
I'm sorry, Jingle. One thing, though. With the form-based code, that first level is intended for that pedestrian scope. So it is required a minimum of 9 feet for that first level. So you're going to get more windows. You're going to get more...
The whole front floor should be mostly windows.
Yep.
Again, I was just covering things just to give you, just so you can see it. And also going back to what Hart said about, outright building a building. This would be one because this is almost 3 acres. Like, you could probably meet all the current B2 setbacks, which is a zero front and, only 20, 30 feet in the back. So, moving on to hydraulic, we picked the FS property. So these would all have to be assembled, as they're all different parcels now. And I tried to make 3 different size buildings to kind of give you a massing understanding of each one. It's very similar to the other one. This one, I showed a little more parking here. Within the form-based code, this would be for downtown commercial. You're allowed to put leveled parking as long as it's in the rear of the building. And this one would be fronting Van Emmon. So there's, I think it's 20 or 30 feet back, then you can start your parking. So it was just kind of showing different types of objects. We put the slip lane in here because the railroad's going here. But again, it's... just trying to show kind of in this area what it would look like.
This property is also B2?
Right.
So again, 6 stories and 80 feet tall with just a building permit.
Correct.
And each one addresses the street that it fronts, so that the ones that are on Van Emmon are lower than what would be, facing, if they were allowed to face Bridge Street or Hydraulic. So.
And then finally, called this the West Block. It's all residentially zoned at the moment, or it's residential uses. This was just a possible way of layout, still showing 2 different buildings on 1 lot, which we would allow in the form-based code, which we don't currently allow. And again, just showing a different size to the nearby buildings. I'm actually going to hop off this in a second and just go right into the model, because sometimes it's helpful to kind of zoom in and out through it. But again, this shows in a residential area what it could look like. This one, they're both 3 stories. Can I get to it? So this gives us a better view. And the lines are representing floors to get kind of a little bit down at a street view level to see kind of that the 3 stories versus there are a lot of 2-story buildings here, and this does go up that way. So they're actually would probably be lower than the single and 2 stories, even just a block.
In this example, this is an R2 zoned block because it's currently single family.
Correct.
So by approving the form-based code, you'd actually be allowing a developer to put in more density without city council approval. So this is the flip side of the other two examples. So in a normal scenario right now, they would have to petition us for rezoning, and they would have to go through public hearing processes. We need city council approval in order to do this. The form-based code, you're saying this is acceptable, and as long as you can meet the requirements of the form-based code, you can come in and pull a building permit and put this in.
Nice. Yeah, and just this actually has the setback a bit from that. That's more or less, these would probably get set back a little more, but again, just in terms of pure following the code. So yeah, that's pretty much it. Oh yeah, I put windows on. There you go. That's a little more accurate. I think there would actually have to be more. I think it was 70 or 80.
70%.
Okay. Any comments or questions?
I still think the most advantageous part about this is that you cut out a lot of the due diligence spent in the earlier parts of departments. That usually is where things go to die. I know if I would have had a couple answers to questions that this type of stuff can answer in the first, 4 or 5 days of kind of dreaming big about something, I'd probably have, my student loans paid off by now. So I think what this does, number one, is it kind of elevates our intent on seeing our downtown reimagined, but it doesn't take us out of the conversation. It kind of says, all right, well, this is the stuff, this is the max what's allowable, and there's no questions anymore. Because a lot of what, I call them bedroom developers in previous meetings, but a lot of what people are spending money on is someone else's vision of what another city allows, and they'll get halfway through the process and find out that all the stuff they thought they were getting because all people would look at is their elevations. Like, oh, we're going to get this. And then you get a couple weeks in, and you've got full-time reviews sitting there, and everything they thought they were going to have is now squashed. It's farther set back, they've got more restrictions on parking, you have to do this, you have to do that. If we can find a way to properly display all of one particular parcel's potential, you minimize somebody going, I can't do what I want to do, 5 or 6 weeks into the project. They can actually make that determination now. And also, since you have that list of all of these other uses that aren't particularly applicable to our downtown, that's also advantageous for a developer because they can now see what isn't going to show up next door. Water treatment facility or a dog kennel. Two things that if you're building a residential development, you're not going to want those things right next door. And plus, all of the other cities that have stuff like this, kind of, you're basically investing in how other people see your city, and you're letting them look at it through a lens that would allow them to see the potential, not just that, we'll wait and find out. And if we can cut out that due diligence period where people get excited about something and then have all their hopes and dreams crushed by an architect, and then, planners, not that it's intentional, but that's the reality of seeing anything from, current empty lots to seeing something being built there. You have to give a little bit on how things are presented in order to kind of get somebody who's interested in doing something. And I think this is a pretty original way of letting kind of technology allow you guys a little bit less, what's the word I'm looking for? It's not as labor intensive to discover the possibility and potential of a property. But it's also something that kind of allows the city council, we have a little bit more of a refresher because we have to worry about somebody coming and building an 8-story building or a 6-story building somewhere where you couldn't even imagine that existing. So I'm still totally down for the form based code.
Anybody else? I like that it addresses that they cannot go as tall as, it's limiting height. But I still, in my opinion, think some of the heights are not conducive to that area. Not so much with this site, but like I'm talking on the west, where, where Van Ammon State Hydraulic, to put a 3-story, it's sort of like when we did the over by St. Pat's, and they wanted to come in and put that. What were we talking originally there?
4-story.
And it didn't fit, and what they did is beautiful. And I kind of get that feeling here, too, that I guess I'd like to see it that we don't have 3 stories. That, come on in. I don't I mean, if you want to put apartments or townhomes, but that it would be three stories on the, in that area. I just don't think it blends. It's a, there's historic old homes in there.
So just as a point of reference, so the Groner property is immediately east of this property.
Right.
It is zoned B2. She could sell, and then an 80-foot-tall, six-story building could go there.
Well, I'm not against
Without any current changes.
Well, I'm just saying in the form-based code here, is there can we lower the heights here? Can we... That's. I mean, I'm not against the the form-based code. I'm just, there's... In that area, I'm picturing, like, what happened with... And I'm picturing the neighborhood there and the people and that are not going to like something just like they did at St. Pat's. So I'm just trying to jump ahead on something like that, that maybe we want to think in an area that is residential. That it'd be only maybe two stories.
What's on the So this is a typical two-story, that's a two-story, that's a two-story. That's actually three stories because you've got the garage on the first level and then you've got two stories above it. So form-based code says once you get to this floor, so it's actually at level three that you set back. So it would actually be less intrusive here than that is right now.
That's just my comment, because basically you're saying that's all two story except that one, and you're still going to have homes there.
But it could be 80 stories. I mean, 80
right.
feet.
But we're still talking. We're okay with the form base, and we're going to lower the height, so we're going to not. We're getting rid of the regular zoning, so it can't.
The 80 feet.
Yeah. Right. We're in agreement that let's do the form base, but can we limit that a little bit, that it's not so tall, or you're even showing on where the rec building is. I mean, I think that is to put a four-story building there. What is our vision for the downtown? Yes, we want it to develop, but we have all these older buildings, and you're gonna put something way taller than those, and I don't like that blend when it doesn't blend, where something sticks out like a sore thumb. I just that's not the look I would want in that area.
Like Soldier Field.
Thank you, like Soldier Field.
Oil and water station.
So, for clarification, so the residential areas that you were speaking of, depending on the building type, so if it was an attached building, it's 3.5 stories. Yard buildings. So you want to see it 2.5? Is two, because what we're running into, especially with downtown living, so you have to consider that there's a return of investment that developers are looking for. So if they don't have the density to support the retail on the first floor because we've capped it at a height, they're not going to build this.
So I get that. I'm talking more going back to that on State Street there. I mean, are you looking at, do we think that that would turn into more commercial there? I'm thinking that's going to be more, say, residential, but maybe apartments, condos,
so like
something of that nature.
Right.
Like right in there.
So I think that's going to pretty much stay residential because if you look at B Street, that's all residential.
Okay, so
this is all residential.
So I'm talking residential. I'm talking that piece. I think there where it's residential, the height should in that particular area, because of what, as you come up that street and you go up, like, closer to the courthouse, there's all these big old, like my house, there's the big old four squares and Victorians. And so I see something, if I was designing this, that I would like to make sure it blends, it doesn't stick out like a sore thumb, that it's not four stories tall. That's just... Now, if you take on the east side or FS and that, it's always been commercial. That's a whole different story. That is your mixed use. I get that. But I guess more where you're looking at where they could redevelop, there's like four houses on that block, and put up something. I'm not against something with more density, but I guess I wanted to. I just wanted to blend. Sure. I see a blending and flowing more. Just like I said, I'm using this perfect example was the St. Pat's, the retirement community there. It was going to be taller than the townhomes. It was going to be taller than St. Pat's Church. They just didn't go. They came down, and it just blends. It just fits. It's like it's always been there.
So on page 26 of form-based code, it tells you what types of buildings, which dictates what size of structure you're going to get. So B Street is residential, and the only uses are a civic building and a yard building, which is single family. So the only uses you're going to get in this block right here is either a civic building, which is owned by the city, or a single family residential. And that single family for a yard building is 3.5.
But we're talking across from Mrs. Groner. Isn't there been some talk to take the 5-6 houses down and make
so
it
here,
multifamily?
So it depends on where they orient. If they orient the building along State Street or along Van Emmon, it only can be a civic building or a single family, which is the yard building. If they front the building along Hydraulic, then it could be a more of the commercial or the downtown mixed use. And if they front it along here, then they're more restricted. They can't have some commercial. So you'll get basically a B1 land use kind of here, B2, maybe a B3 here, and then all this is, they front here, single family.
Or the sample building that you...
Or the sample building.
Yeah.
But you also allow a 100-foot return, so if you're on Street B, which is the east side, mm-hmm. you can take 100 feet on the purple B Street
yep.
residential.
Yep.
So that's... This is where you're starting to mix those. Even though you're fronting and you're getting the allowance on the street that you're utilizing, you could actually gain an extra 100 feet.
You could if you did that way, if you L-shaped the
that's
building.
Actually, yeah,
right.
I actually, in all the models, I did something that was like maximum.
Right.
Just to say, this is like the blowout of the entire thing.
Right.
So, yes, and that's kind of exactly what happened on that.
So what Chris is saying is, so you take advantage of the hydraulic street frontage, you still can come back about 100 feet this way with that same building height, but you're not maxing out the site with one big, massive, 60, tall, 80
that's,
tall
that's
building.
Just my concern. We're talking, this is the center of town, it's the historic center, of town. And I guess I want to, in my vision was that we should preserve that. I was just down in Wheaton to a restaurant and where they've done this. They've got like 4-story, and it's like a canyon you go
in.
But
you're not going to get
know?
That here. And so what you could do is if you are with a residential, happy with a 3.5, then we can bring it down to 2.5. But the only thing going here... a single-family residential or a civic building that's owned by the city.
I just would like the heights lowered, but I think I would
for
like
all that. Of them or just for
those, especially those two lots. When you go east and you're looking at, like where FS and that whole block is. That's.
There you go.
Yeah, I mean,
so
we all
like
know that's
take,
already
taken down from 3 to Eric's Island. There you go. That down from 3.5 to 2.5 is what you're suggesting.
Or maybe 3, because what's out there is 3 feet.
Yeah, I just thought it's more conducive to the whole. Yeah, like that.
It's as easy as that. Look at that.
Mm-hmm.
Ah, those are design teachers. Mm-hmm. I leave them in.
Well, elevator shaft.
It's just over there, because that's more. That hasn't been a commercial or a business area. When you go east there, that whole block has always been, and it's always been designated.
So just before we prepare this, then, I mean, is that the recommendation of the committee that we would then change those two blocks to shorten the height of those buildings?
And keep in mind, those buildings are only going to be residential, single-family detached.
I know.
So instead of allowing them to be 3.5 stories, you want to bring them down to 3 or to 2.5. Because right now they're
allowed. Well, what's your 3.5? Is that allowing for parking or underneath them? I mean, what, why, where do we get the half story?
So you can get the half story if you do have parking on the floor. That still will be 3 full stories, but you can go
vaulted ceilings.
Then
you get 3.5 also from structural techniques. Mm-hmm.
Your front lobby is,
you know, if you went, if you went like a 2.5, what is it now? What are you at now? I lost my spot. Was it 3.5 or 4.5?
So for R2, you can go 2.5 stories right now. We're proposing 3.5. That's the
only. Well, here I'm just looking at here where you're saying.
Go to the lot west of Groner's, the one that he's got the mock-up on.
Yeah.
Because that one we've got in there as it's got 3 different uses. So the most intense one is the B Street, correct?
B Street is the most intense.
Okay, so if they
and then they have hydraulics.
Orient the property to the east, so closer to Groner's and away from the residential lot to the west. What are those standards that we've got in there?
Yard building, single family detached, so that's B Street residential here. So it'll be single family detached, and it's 3.5 stories.
No, South Main. I'm asking about South Main.
Oh.
South Main is the eastern side of the property.
It's over here.
Yeah.
Main.
So that one's B Street, which is the most intense between Hydraulics, State, Van Emmon, and South Main.
Bridge Street is the most. Yeah, out of
Bridge,
those. Yeah.
Out of the hydraulic, probably, because the hydraulic would allow the commercial.
Correct.
Okay, so this chart says here hydraulic is going to be classified as what? Downtown living? Cottage commercial?
You can do both.
So
yes.
Downtown living is 4 stories, okay. Cottage commercial is 3.5 stories.
Okay, so that means on hydraulic you could have up to 4 stories.
Correct.
And then on cottage commercial on the east side you could have up to 3.5 stories. And so, I mean, you have to look at it holistically, but if they had the property oriented to the west, to the residential areas.
3.5. So
and that would be
so,
yard.
So you're telling me it depends where a developer comes in and
correct.
Wants to place
and orient
this
building. Correct.
The,
yeah.
I would say on these, though, remove the 100-foot return, though. Because if we're talking about fronting either hydraulic or South Main, and you're able to return that, you know, down State Street or down Van Emmon, take that allowance away. I mean, those are the concerning streets, is what it sounds like, a State in Van Emmon as it's adjacent to the single-family residential as it's planned. So if you remove the 100-foot return, that alleviates that potential to have that maximum interface between the two.
Is there a better... So we're talking about building depth almost. Like,
well, it's not the building depth.
No.
It's creating the L-shaped building.
The L-shaped
right.
building.
Right.
Because your building depth is going to be defined by the
correct.
The use of that building is what's going to define that. I mean, you're not going to build a 200-foot deep commercial building here. Right. It's going to be 60 to 80 feet deep. But then if you turn it around the corner, that's going to give you additional units. But that's what's interesting.
So, two things. That could restrict the ability for courtyards. Is it going to affect all districts or just specific districts? Because it's based off of street frontage. So how would we call it out? I got to think
oh,
how
yeah,
would we call it out.
Multiple streets types B, multiple streets types. So create a subset to the B street or whichever one you want to subset. And we have subset of the streets as it is right now.
Subset. And remove the 100-foot return.
Yeah, because we have E Street residential and then just E Street.
Right.
So maybe there's another delineation for that. Or it precludes that.
Oh, you mean create another district?
Mm-hmm. Well, not even another district. It's the, we have the B Streets that are, I'm looking in the PDF, those are maroon. Yeah. So you see we've got two types of B Streets. B Street and then B Street residential.
Right.
And what we're saying is...
You say modify B Street residential.
Modify these types of areas here.
To
so
move
that,
the okay,
so
the
move
okay,
the allowance.
Got it,
so
got
that
it.
The wrap is...
Right.
Got
so
it.
The wrap that you could wrap maybe
yeah.
a bridge
so
or something here.
Right.
But
those
not
are,
in those residential.
Not when they're coming into the residential area.
So the two overarching thoughts are limit the scope of the 100-foot wraparound section to business areas, and then reduce the height of maximum buildings on the main four residential blocks on the west side of the property. Okay, so really the crux of, I think, your issue, though, is the lot immediately west of Groner's.
Well, both of them could do.
So the ones 9, 17, and 18, so that's like northwest, southwest, yeah, those three there, those are only allowable as B Street residential, except for 9, I guess you can do a little bit on hydraulic, but it would have to be oriented towards the river.
Right.
So I think there's already a baked-in limit for how high and intense those buildings can be and how they have to be oriented. But 10 is a little bit more of a wild card because there's more possibilities there. And so I think your comment there is that whatever we've got planned should be slightly less in intensity and height than
so
what he had mocked up.
Yes.
Okay.
So it blends with the existing neighborhood.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And so is that
transition.
The opinion of everybody else in the committee too?
Sure.
Okay. We can draft a couple options there and either bring them back or to city council as a...
Do we have... my mind's kind of gone. Are there architectural standards too for this area?
Yes, for all of them there.
We're going to work that in, so we're not.
It's already in there.
It's worked in already. Mm-hmm. Okay. Then let's go back to the one, you know, where you're talking where Old Second, the Rex building is. All the other buildings on both sides of there are two story, and then we're going to come in and we're going to have the possibility of a four story building there. I guess it would be your setback, so it's not right on. If you're going to have something tall, first of all, I don't like it that tall because I just don't, I don't think across the street you would get something that tall because it would have to be, it would probably be softened because of the being built into the hill. It just, to me, that just sticks out like a sore thumb down there. When you have four stories, five.
So we have ultimate control over that property because we own it.
Yes.
So whoever we sold it to in the future, we always can put on whatever restriction we'd like, including requiring them to put together a development plan that had unique.
And it would be nicer if you had bigger setbacks just because of 47 in that corner.
Yeah.
Definitely.
So, in theory, it's fine. If it happens 40 years from now, none of us might be around to effectuate it. But,
but I just, I appreciate you doing a mock-up of the size, but it just doesn't fit down there. I'm sorry. The height doesn't fit down there when you have the other two-story buildings. Like I said, when you go back onto the FS and you go back to Houston and, between hydraulic and that, that also dips down. So you could put something tall and it won't, because of the hill, it won't be, I think, as obnoxious looking.
Sure. That's B2 also.
Right.
So we could pull a building permit now and put up six stories without.
No, and I appreciate that it's capped because I think what do you have that capped at?
Four.
In the four base. Yeah. No, that's. That I would be cool there. It's just I'm more concerned about the residential. I'm just, to me, I'm just trying to see how to keep it cohesive and not, in the character of that neighborhood, being that's the oldest section of the town between there and the other side of the river, and just embracing that more than us getting really crazy and have something really obnoxious and modern coming in. Because once it goes to this, it doesn't come back to us to say anything.
Right. Correct.
So say this.
Nor does
this
it
say this applied
now
to the senior center. That never would have come to us, other than all the complaints.
Well, it wouldn't be in this overlay district.
But say that was in one. Say it was in an overlay, and they came in with the original six stories. It never would have.
That four.
Oh, you're right. Yeah. So say they came in with that. We would never.
Yeah, if there was a property like in the downtown area or somewhere else in town, they could have put up six stories without us. But they needed to rezone that property in order to do it, which is why it came up.
that's just my thing for the vision of down there, is just to keep it in mind, to keep it with the character of our of Yorkville and the town, with the old courthouse, the old houses. You know, our downtown has all the older buildings. And keep it so you don't have something just, you know. Actually, the old second building, it's terrible, you know, our building, but when it was old second, it's terrible looking. It's dumb looking. You know, that was some back then that they didn't keep it in the character, other than the height. So that's just my concern. But if we could, so if we could look at that, that it isn't, can we come down a story on that property? Or like you're just saying, just see what happens when it, on our property at the bank. Just let it ride and see. Because it's our, you know.
Yeah, I mean, we can do whatever we want with it when we decide to sell it. So, I mean, it's helpful, I guess, to preload the property, but it's not necessary.
Anybody else got anything?
So, do I have clear direction on how the height in the B Street residential? So it's 3.5 stories now. Are we looking at 3 stories, 2.5 stories?
I think they were open to either one, as long as it's less than what it currently is. So if we have ideas that can mitigate a height difference, maybe 3 is okay. And if we can't, maybe 2.5 is a little bit better. So.
Agreed.
What are you
saying? 3.
You're saying 3?
As long as it's got the restrictions on the returns.
Okay.
Only for B Street residential.
Yes.
Got it. Do you want models next time around?
Anybody want models? Are we going to
maybe a narrative update of what we're talking about? Is okay.
Yeah, probably.
I've got my home, so.
Yeah.
Whatever will help.
But I wouldn't let me in deal with it.
So we're good with that one?
Yep.
Everybody's on board? Okay.
Do we want to bring that back next month for review, or do you want to have a city council discussion about it? I mean, I think the majority of it everybody else is okay with, so we could bring the group.
Why don't we do that?
Okay.
Bring it to city council?
Yeah.
Bring it to
Council. Probably two and a half weeks from now, as opposed to half a week from now.
Yeah, well, that's fine.
Okay.
All righty. Okay, let's go on to EDC 2019-68, the Unified Development Ordinance, UDO, change order.
Yes. So last time we spoke, there was a proposal by House Levine saying that they were going to reduce the scope by reducing meeting schedule. And that was all that they were offering up for this.
Like $5,000.
And so, right. So we went back to told them, you know, the disappointment that was expressed by our committee and their unwillingness to kind of meet this as INCO Plus did, and they relented and they offered up to reduce their contract fee without any change to the originally approved scope by $5,500. So with their $5,500 reduction and the $4,500 that INCO Plus put up, we gained 4 additional calculators under our current budget. So with that and the one that we purchased, we have 5 calculators, 2 shy of the full package. So if the committee wants to move forward, the change order would just be an increase in the overall budget of $5,000.
I'm good with that.
Questions?
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Well, I have my comments. I asked him point blank in the committee out there if everything was included. He said, yes, yep. It should not be amended on our part.
Well, we got a little better compromise than what we have, so
yeah,
we're all good with this. All right, moving on. That's it. Any other additional business?
I don't think so.
Okay, 7:14. I'm sorry, 14 minutes over.